Good morning, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. My name is Rick Hopkins, your host, and it's good to be with you again. We're here at Fernwood Studios again with Hal and Rainer James.
Hey there.
Bob and Mary Griswold.
Hello, hello.
And we have some special guests. We're recording this on Wednesday, the day after the election, and we've got Senator Norman Sanderson with us this morning.
Hello.
We've got Representative Michael Speciale from District 3.
Hey, hey, hey.
And on the phone with us, we've got Representative John Bell, and John's the majority leader in the House here in North Carolina.
That's great.
Hello.
Well, guys, it was a busy night last night. It was a long day, but it looks like you guys came through in shining colors there and maintained the majority here in North Carolina. And before I go any further with this, I want to talk a little bit about CCTA. Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association. If this is the first time you're listening to our program, because we're new here on 107.1, CCTA is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, 501c3 grassroots organization. And we advocate for smaller government, lower taxes, more freedom, free market enterprise. We're just a grassroots organization.
Adherence to the Constitution.
Right, adherence to the Constitution. And we like to work with our representatives to hold them accountable. And as I said, we're nonpartisan, but we do like to have conservative representation. And we do all we can to make sure that we have that. And one thing about the three gentlemen that we're talking to this morning, when we make our trips to Raleigh, our watchdog groups, and speak to legislators up there, they always make time for us, and their doors are always open. So, gentlemen, we thank you for that. And with that being said, let's talk about the election. We're still waiting on results for the governor's race, but we still hold the majority in the House and the Senate, correct?
That's correct.
Correct.
And it was quite interesting. John, you took 71.65% of the vote.
Ooh, here, here.
Michael, you took 64.86, and Norman, you took 61.62. Those are impressive figures. I think that carries a mandate, and I hope that the rest of the legislative members up there are paying attention to that. What have you got to say, Norman? You think that you're going to be able to get anything done in this new session?
Well, I think, Rick, I think we'll get a lot done. We have been going through some murky waters for the last 4 years with the Attorney General race, and I'm not ready to give up on any of them. I don't know what may happen. I think that our leaders, the races that are in question right now, I think that we should follow through to every extent that the law provides. I just think it's too coincidental that 90,000 plus votes ended up right at a very opportune time to flip these races. Votes that should have been counted or accounted for and in put in the system hours earlier. And so that really concerns me. And so I'm hoping that the governor, our attorney general candidate, state auditor candidate will pursue every option that they have under state law to make sure that these votes totals are correct and that as much as we possibly can be to make sure that there were no fraudulent activities in this election cycle.
Can you tell us a little bit about what those options are?
Well, I think those options are, and we were discussing this a few minutes, the general statute sets out what happens after an election. We're like Rick said, we're here on Wednesday following the night, following Election Day yesterday. And until Sunday, the Board of Elections will still receive and count absentee ballots. And so, they'll still come in. There are provisional ballots that have yet to be included in these totals. And so really we will not know the exact numbers we're working with until that period ends, so it'll probably be sometime Monday. Then there's a certain amount of time after that that candidates can ask for recounts. Not sure how that will go. I would at least hope that all of these ballots that are in question, at least that's a good start. That would be a great place to start with a recount to make sure that, you know, that that they're right.
All right. Well, we definitely want to see that the process is followed through on, because contrary to what a lot of people have been espousing out there, I am confident that there is voter fraud.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that there's voter fraud. The degree of voter fraud is the thing that we have always had difficulty proving. But, you know, we're getting closer and closer to a time when I think all voter fraud is going to be very front and center. And, you know, my desire, my prayer is that we will at some point in the future, near future, be able to eliminate a great percentage of voter fraud, because it's just not, it is just, it's the height of evil as far as I'm concerned, because voting is one of the most sacred things that we as citizens have. And when someone comes along and cheats you out of your vote, because every fraudulent vote nullifies a vote that is a legal vote.
Right.
And that is just, they're taking away your rights. They're taking away everything that we hold dear as citizens.
I was going to say, many times yesterday, Election Day, I heard a number of people just really, really say that they knew it was a privilege to come out and vote. And it really is a privilege given to us that we really don't want to have abused by the fraudulent practices.
Absolutely.
Well, Michael, congratulations to you on your victory. And were there any surprises for you yesterday?
No, not really. Even the presidential race came out about the way I predicted it would. Everybody thought I was nuts, but I predicted that he was going to pull it off, and he was going to do well. As far as North Carolina, the General Assembly, we lost four good folks in the House, but we gained four others, so it was pretty much a wash. We've still got 74 people, which is two more than the what we need for a supermajority. As far as I'm concerned, that's a mandate. As far as I'm concerned, you know, the things that we've done have resonated with the people of North Carolina, HB2 and all the rest of it. Now, I'm starting to get emails from people, get rid of HB2, but again, these are emails coming from, you know, elsewhere, so I don't put any stock in them, but I think we did the right thing. And as far as I'm concerned, HB2 is a dead issue, and I think we all need to move on and look towards the future here as to some of the other things that North Carolina needs taken care of, and that's what we're up there for.
All right. Well, before we get on to some of that, I do want to get John in on this. John, you're a House Majority Leader. What have you got to say about the election yesterday?
Well, it was very exciting. I look at what happened 6 years ago when the state of North Carolina and the citizens stood up and voted a Republican majority in and said we want to go a different direction in the state. And I look at what's all been accomplished over the last 6 years. And when you look at the tax reform, you look at the Medicaid reform, you look at the cuts and regulations and our state growing, our state economy is growing by leaps and bounds. We're consistently one of the top one or two places in the country to do business. We have the 23rd largest economy in the world. These things just didn't happen overnight. This was a process that this Republican majority put into place 6 years ago. And I look at what we're dealing with today. I'm actually in Raleigh today. Got here this morning to start going through how we move forward and what we're working with. But at the 11th hour, 99% of the vote turned in, over 90,000 ballots show up. And weeks before that, there's a push to extend early voting. You look at the months before that, there was a push, and a appointed judge decided that you did not need to have an ID to vote in the state of North Carolina. And not only are we going to do that, we're going to extend early voting another 7 days on top of that. You know, this was a... I'm not one of these doomsday type people, but you know, this was pretty well orchestrated plan.
Right.
And it seemed like they actually had these provisions put in place. And out of all the places in North Carolina, Durham,
yeah,
which is one of the mecca for liberal activities across the state, you know, this happened. And this is a good time for the listeners in this program to actually reach out to their Board of Elections, to reach out to myself and Representative Bashali and Senator Sanderson. If they saw anything at the voting booths or at the polling locations, anything they experienced personally that has to deal with voter fraud, please report it to the North Carolina NCGOP, the State Republican Party, the local Republican Party, the Board of Elections. Report it to us, and let us get those complaints in, because what we don't want to happen is this election to be stolen through fraudulent activity.
Right.
And I'm afraid it has happened. And once again, North Carolina is going to be put on a microscope. And I hope that that all these candidates will follow the letter of the law and pursue every option available. As far as the election comes into play, it was a good night for us. We maintained the supermajority, like Representative Bashali said. The Senate did that as well. I look at some of the issues we face in the state, and Representative John Bradford was ground zero for the House Bill 2 movement, and the millions of dollars that was dumped in here from California and Illinois and New York and other places to try to influence our election. And the people of North Carolina stood up and said no. They said absolutely not. Not only do we like the direction that this state is going, we want to flip some other seats. And for the first time that I can remember, you now have a conservative Republican going into the Department of Public Instruction. Maybe they'll actually let us in the building now, Michael and North. But you have a new insurance commissioner. We actually have a state treasurer that's going to be able to balance the checkbook. These are exciting times. And then you take it a step further and you look at the council state, the Secretary of Labor and what Commissioner Troxler was able to do. And then you look at what our lieutenant governor and the effort that was put in and the votes that he received. It was a good night for us. It was a really good night for us. I still have some strong concerns about the governor's race and the attorney general's race, and I hope they prevail in the end, and I hope the right thing is done. But overall, it was a good night, and we're looking at moving forward.
Right, and let me point out something about the gubernatorial race and the comments you were making about the 90,000 votes and all. We're talking about the same individual that has served as our attorney general and did not defend the voter ID law. He did not do his job as attorney general, and I can't understand why so many people thought he would do his job as governor. Hal?
I've got a question I'd like to ask Representative Bell. And John, could you tell us a little bit about how the House gets organized, how the leadership is chosen, what process we'll go through to organize the House now?
So one of the things that I'm able to do as majority leader is actually call the caucuses. And so what we did a number of weeks ago is I actually called a caucus for right after the election to go ahead and start moving forward. Regardless of what the election outcome was, we needed to be organized and we needed to start moving forward. And I'm glad we did that, because now not only are we looking at the new election going to a new session, but also, of course, on everybody's mind is still Hurricane Matthew and what may happen there and some things that could happen over the next couple months. So we'll have that session on Monday, and actually Michael received an email on this today, and we'll come in and we'll do a welcome session for everybody. We'll go ahead and talk about some of the issues we gotta talk about, and then we'll set a date to go over our caucus's plan of organization. And once that caucus plan of organization and the rules for the caucus are put in place, then we'll actually go into leadership elections, and we'll vote on Speaker of the House, Speaker Pro Tem, Majority Leader, Deputy Majority Leader, Conference Chair, and Majority Whip. And then our new members will actually have an election of their Freshman Leader and Freshman Whip. And that will make up the leadership team moving forward for the House. And then that team gets together and starts working on committee assignments with the Speaker and it starts moving forward there.
John, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we are nonpartisan, but we are conservatives, constitutional conservatives. Is there a conservative caucus in Raleigh?
We have a 74-member conservative caucus. We have some that are more conservative than others just by the makeups of who they are and where they are. And different issues affect different individuals different ways. You know, what Representative Spishalli and I deal with on a daily basis is a lot different than what happens in Wake County and what happens in Mecklenburg County. And it really is a little difference that happens in Surrey County and then Murphy County. So you have different issues that evolve throughout the years, and people look at those issues different ways. And I wouldn't say I don't know of a liberal member in our caucus. There are some that are a little more moderate numbers, but we have 74. I would think if you asked every one of them, they would say they're conservative Republicans.
John, may I ask you a question that may be inappropriate? Nationally, I think we have just seen the rural areas rise up in great numbers and win out over city folk. In our state, we have some huge city areas, and we tend to have rural areas east our way and out west. Where is the balance of power?
Right now, if you look at just the sheer makeup of the House and the Senate, before we walk in the door, Wake County and Mecklenburg County has actually have more representation than we do in all of Eastern North Carolina.
That's why it's so important for
us as legislators and the citizens to elect quality individuals that can actually speak up and stand their ground. And of course, as population trends move towards the cities, we're going to have our districts will get larger and we'll have less representation in rural areas. The makeup of the House now, you have a speaker that is from a rural area. You have a Speaker pro tem that's from a metropolitan area. You have a majority leader that's from a rural area. You have a deputy majority leader that is from a metropolitan area. You have a conference chair from a semi-rural area, and you have a whip that's from more of a rural area. So if you're looking at as far as leadership positions, there's definitely a small advantage there for rural North Carolina.
Thanks. Well, I would like to ask, are there any specific issues that you already have on your radar that you would like to see dealt with during this legislative session?
Well, for me personally, there's personal issues in the district that I'll be dealing with, and it's sure like Representative Spishalli and Senator Sanderson. But what I bring forward as a majority leader is that it's not my decision or the speaker's decision on what we take up. It's the caucus's decision. And so once the leadership is put in place, that's when we start working with the caucus and actually looking at what the caucus's agenda is. And just off the top of my head, I'm sure there's going to be some type of economic development packages, and how do we grow the economy here in North Carolina. We're going to take a look at tax reform, Medicaid reform. Those two things are something that we instituted years ago. They're more process-oriented. I would actually think, and I would be surely disappointed if this didn't come up, but with our new superintendent of public instruction, I would think there's actually a lot that could be done, especially with a working partnership in the Department of Public Instruction. But from my standpoint, the House caucus will dictate that agenda, so I really can't answer that, and I'm pretty sure that's the same way it works in the Senate.
Well, I hope the caucus is also in tune with the people's agenda. And what I'm talking about there is that some CCTA's meetings, you know, the third Tuesday of every month, we have a public meeting. We pick hot topics that the general public's interested in. One of those is gun control. And I know there was some gun legislation that was left on the table. I think Larry Pittman and Michael, you may have been... I think that some of that was being looked at to be picked up again in this new session. Michael, is that true?
Yeah, some of what we saw last time that really didn't go anywhere would probably be resubmitted this time. I've got a whole folder, and I imagine a lot of them are the same way. I've got a folder full of possible bills, things that people have talked to me about since the last session, and I say, well, I'm going to look at it as we move into the new section. So a lot of it is just simply a matter of prioritizing, because we can only submit so many bills. In the House, we can submit, I think technically it says 15 bills, but we're going to modify that probably back to 10 bills, which is what it was. That's 1,200 bills if each of us put in 10 bills. So you have to prioritize what it is we want to get done. And so, like I said, I've got a folder, and I know several other folks got folders. So it's a matter of going through that.
All right.
All the things that you all have talked to us about over the last...
If that portfolio includes really getting rid of Common Core instead of tinkering with it and rebranding it.
I'd like to ask all three of them to address that issue.
Yeah.
Until Common Core is gone, it will continue to be an issue with many of us. It'll continue to be an issue with me, I can tell you that.
Great. Right now, we have a promise at the presidential level that he's going to get rid of it, so hopefully that'll take place.
Let me just, and I've spoken this every legislative session I've been in. We do a lot of planning, but every legislative session kind of gets its own life and its own wheels and directions, because there's so many things that even though we try to plan ahead and you know, see what's coming, there's some things that you just don't see. We're in a very different situation this year because we have no idea what may come down from Washington, D.C. that it will affect the General Assembly that we have to deal with.
Right. Hopefully it'll be better rather than worse.
Well, but we don't know. And so that's it could be Medicaid issues. It could be education issues. It could be a whole lot of different things. Primarily, our number one priority in this upcoming General Assembly cycle is the budget. That's what we have to do. If we don't get anything else done, we have got to produce a budget.
It's got to
that's going to take a lot of time, because that just doesn't happen by itself. There's a lot of background stuff that you have to do because actually you have three budgets. You have a governor's recommended budget. This is 2017 will be the year that the Senate initiates the first legislative budget, and then it goes to the House. And so you're talking about from the end of January, you know, if we get the budget out before July 1st, it would be an awesome accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many other things in local governments that are tied to our budget. But then you've got the redistricting issue that is before the court. The court has said we've got to go back and redistrict again. And then you've got some other major issues that we may have to take a look at. I think we need to really take a look at some in this year, right after this election cycle, while it's still fresh and hot in everybody's mind. We need to look at some election reform in North Carolina to try and head off some of this stuff that we see happening.
Wonderful.
Are we going to pursue voter ID again?
Yes.
You know, are we going
please.
To take that
yes.
back up? Well, but I'm saying, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the table, and we have even though we don't have a set amount of time, we do know that we need to get in, take care of our business, and get out of Raleigh. We don't need to be there till September, October, November, like we have in the past. I think one of the things that, and again, I'm not prophesying that our governor is going to be who it appears it's going to be, our attorney general, any of those offices. I'm still hopeful that something will surface that will really, because I think they're been stolen. I really, mm-hmm. in my heart of hearts, think that those elections have been stolen.
I'm glad
and
to hear
so,
you say that.
And proving it is a different thing. But you know, we will try to follow that through. I think that I'm hopeful that our leadership in the Senate and the House will do everything within our power to help in that endeavor. I don't know what that may be. Don't know what that'll look like. But you know. So we have a lot on our plate coming up in this next session.
You certainly do. Well, gentlemen, we need to pause here to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back in just a moment.
As a strong advocate of Second Amendment rights, CCTA is proud to be involved with S&D Gun and Knife Shows. The next S&D Gun and Knife Show will be at the Craven County Fairgrounds in New Bern on Saturday and Sunday, November 12th and 13th. Buy, sell, and trade with Eastern North Carolina's best dealers and enjoy the most competitive prices in the state. Most gun enthusiasts and collectors agree S&D Gun and Knife Shows are the place to be. The next show is November 12th and 13th at the Craven County Fairgrounds in New Bern.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. Bite Me Firearms, crazy name for an outstanding gun shop. Bite Me Firearms carries a variety of guns. They handle transfers, have one-day on-site concealed carry training, do AR customization, and will put their gun prices against anyone within 50 miles. Bite Me Firearms, Old Cherry Point Road, New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Again, in the studios with us today, we have Senator Norman Sanderson, Representative Michael Speciale, and on the telephone, we have Representative John Bell, House Majority Leader. Gentlemen, it's been an interesting discussion so far, but I'd like to get into a couple other issues. Reading some articles today, one was talking about the effects of House Bill 2 on the races for the elections. And one of the comments here says, behind the scenes, minority Democrats feel that too much weight is being given to LGBT activists. Within the North Carolina Democratic structure, LGBT activists make up at least 40% of the North Carolina Democratic Party when it comes to elected positions and appointments. And the article went on to list some of those individuals. And how is it that such a small minority of the population has such a big percentage of representation in a political party and is pushing such an agenda to control our politics? What can we do about that?
that's a good question.
I'll be more than happy to take this one.
Okay. Follow money.
First of all, you're looking at money.
That's it. That's the key.
You know, these groups behind these groups, the HRC and the Human Rights Campaign and Equality NC, you look at the amount of money that was poured into the state of North Carolina to dictate the election. I point back to Mecklenburg County and Wake County, which were two of the hotbeds for the HB2 issue. And if you go back and remember, these folks basically told Governor McCrory that you're going to be the litmus test for our movement, and we're going to put everything we've got against North Carolina, and we're going to make you pay. And at the end of the day, you know, it looks like they had to pull a fast one at the end, which I hope gets corrected, to take out Governor McCrory, and the citizens of the state rejected their agenda. Completely rejected their agenda. I mean, blatantly, completely rejected their agenda. And you look at the hotbeds in Wake County, we have Representative Marilyn Avila, Representative Gary Pendleton, Representative Chris Malone, Representative Nelson Dollar, and then Representative Skip Stam. You had an open seat there with Representative late Linda Hunt Williams. But they went after four of those five seats and were successful in taking two. But on one of those, they barely got, and then they went after the Mecklenburg County area, and John Bradford, who was actually a bill sponsor of House Bill 2, They actually fully funded an opponent against him, and not only did he win, but he won by a good margin. Unfortunately, we lost our Representative Rob Bryan, who's been a champion for education here in the General Assembly. We lost him, but we still maintain a veto-proof majority. And I think that's also where you saw the rural areas come out to vote. The rural areas are tired of these extreme liberal progressive policies and agendas being pushed down their throat, and people don't like it.
Now that we're talking about Wake County a little bit, there was another article in the Carolina Journal about a win by Wake County Superior Court Judge Mike Morgan against Associate Justice Bob Edmonds, who has served on the court since 2001. This effectively flipped the court to the Democrats. Morgan got 54% of the vote to Edmonds' 48%. And the race, although it's technically nonpartisan, Morgan's win and Edmonds' loss changes the makeup of the court from 4-3. Democrats over Republicans. That's a serious thing that we're going to have to deal with. You know, people talking to me and expressing their dissatisfaction with the way things have been going feel hopeless, because let's go back to the marriage amendment. 60-some percent of the citizens of this state voted for that, and it was overturned. And you go back to voter ID, same thing. The will of the people was voter ID. We went through a primary, we had voter ID, and to the best of my knowledge, there were no lawsuits, there were no problems with anybody being disenfranchised, but that was overturned, not by an elected official, but by an appointed judge. And people say, what's the use? What's the use in even trying, putting forth any effort, if we go out and we vote for it and it gets overturned? So let's talk about state sovereignty and push back against these federalists that are coming in here and overturning the will of the people in the state. Is there any plans to do anything, or anything that can be done about that?
Well, I think as a state, we've got the right to stand up to the federal government when we get some of these unconstitutional rulings. The voter ID ruling, for example, it was not based on fact. It was not based on law. It was based on personal opinion and ideology. The comments from the judge that, you know, we went after minorities with almost surgical precision was just simply a preposterous and a ridiculous comment.
Basis.
And it was offensive to all of us in the General Assembly that participated in that, that voted on that. There's nothing in his judgment that was constitutional, that was legal, or that was factual. So that needs, you know, what we can do, I don't know. But the General Assembly, I think, does have the right to stand up. I think, of course, if the governor's race stands like it is, I don't expect much out of that, a Governor Cooper. But certainly I expect the General Assembly to stand up and start pushing against some of this
stuff. So what's stopping that from happening? What's stopping the General Assembly from standing up and saying nullification? We refuse to comply.
Because it's not up to the General Assembly. The one that actually implements the laws made by General Assembly would be the governor. So the governor could stand up and say, this is not going to happen. As far as I'm concerned, if I were the governor of this state when that ruling came up, I would have said, well, we're not going to use any state resources, any state personnel to implement anything in any of these egregious rulings, any of these rulings that we believe are unconstitutional or not valid. And we have that right not to use state resources. That's one option that we have. And the federal government cannot force us to use our people or our money or our resources to implement their will. So that's one option that we have. So there are some things that we can do, but it's going to take, it's not just going to, you know, it can't just be the General Assembly. I mean, you know, state government, the governor has to be on board, because it's up to him to implement what the General Assembly puts in place.
Thanks, Michael. But I'd like each of the three gentlemen to address that notification or the state sovereignty. Norman, would you take?
Well, I'll be glad to. You know, one of the threats that the federal government has over every state is withholding of funds.
Mm-hmm.
And where we have gotten into problem in North Carolina is our reliance on federal funding. And we didn't get there overnight, and we're not going to be able to get away from there overnight. Now, you saw with HB2, one of the things that really was a focal point was the threat from the Department of Justice to withhold federal education funds and Title VII and Title IX, I think, funds. Whether or not that was legal or not, there were some opinions both ways, but it never, to this point, hasn't, you know, come down to that. But, you know, I think that we as a state, in order to be able to stand up and tell the federal government, and of course, I think we all hope that we see a change in the next 4 years, because, you know, these federal judges that are in place that are coming forth with these rulings, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, to go back and see who appointed these judges and who their loyalty lies to. And I think a lot of what we're dealing with right now in the president of North Carolina was totally centered on this election, on winning this election, because to Democrats, to liberals, this was the death blow to the conservative party as we know it.
If they could have
pulled this off, and they pulled out all the plugs. When you look at when they rejected our voter ID, which I think goes a long way to curbing voter fraud, when they rejected that, if you look at the reasoning they used, they came up with about 8 points in that voter ID. Every single one of them, the reason that they highlighted those points was discrimination, 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 discrimination. We have been taken to school on this phrase discrimination.
It does not exist.
And in everybody's mind it exists, because you say discrimination, there's nothing that you can say to clear a room any faster than discrimination.
But during the primary, we had voter ID.
I know, but they weren't concerned.
And there were no cases of discrimination.
But they weren't concerned about the primary. The primary made no difference to them, because the primary was a battle with Republicans, and they didn't care about how the Republican battle came out. They were concerned about their person, and all of this stuff, as far as the courts are concerned, whether it's making the Beaufort County and two other counties put all of those challenged voters back on the rolls, whether it was the voter ID, whether it was there was a couple more. It was about this. It was about yesterday.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. It all can be drawn a line back to yesterday.
And largely, now, the good guys won in spite of hell and high water.
So I don't know. I don't know what that's going to do going forward. I don't know how these judges now are going to respond to a new president. You know, that's the greatest thing we can ever do for any state in the United States is to make sure that the federal appointments and even the Supreme Court is not lifetime appointments, that they need to be somehow held accountable, because no president should be able to reach ahead into the future 25 years and still affect the future of our state or our nation.
The one possible saving grace that we have, is it not, is that they serve during good behavior. We haven't taken advantage of means to get rid of the ones who behave badly,
but the only way people can get rid of the judicial system is the judicial system, and that's like telling
Can the U.S. House not do impeachment proceedings against the judiciary?
You need to look at the roles of the U.S. House. Can the U.S. House do anything at this point? I have no idea. Can the U.S. Senate do anything at this point? They have really not shown me anything in the last 8 years.
No.
I think that, you know, my concern is that the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate doesn't spend the next 4 years trying to be a roadblock, a stumbling block, to our president.
Mm-hmm. Can we get a comment from Representative Bell on this subject?
Yeah, I mean, both Representative Speciale and Senator Sanderson commented. I agree with them both. The only thing I would add is, you know, over the last 8 years, the judicial system overall has lost, the average person has lost complete faith in the judicial system.
Amen.
I mean, you know, not only do we have activist judges, you know, in certain parts of the state, we have judges that have been convicted of crimes that are still trying to win elections. And we've got, you got to restore faith in your judiciary. And, you know, our country was founded, like every single one of you know, and everyone listened, with the three branches of government. And they all have their equal and separate in power. But when your judiciary branch tries to become a legislative branch, and your executive branch tries to become a legislative branch, yeah, and everybody wants to make their own rules and regulations and laws, it doesn't work. And that's what's happened for the last 8 years. When you've got, it's been mentioned numerous times, when you've got the citizens of the state saying, hey, you know what? We believe in marriage between one man and one woman. And not only the majority, but an overwhelming majority believes this, and this is how we want to govern our state. That's not his role. That's not his role. And a big part of this election, and I heard it work in the polls, and I'm sure you did too, is I heard people say, you know what, I really don't like either candidate, but I'm so worried about the Supreme Court. I'm so worried about some of our judges. And that's what a number of people were voting on. And they put more faith in President-elect Donald Trump than they did Hillary Clinton, because it was a culture of corruption that her and her husband started many, many years ago and grew in, and they created this corruption model. And people were fed up with it. And I hope that everyone actually, what happened last night wasn't a yay Republican or a bad Democrat. It was, we're fed up. We're fed up. And we want to put people in there that are going to answer to the people and be held accountable to the people, not live by a whole different set of rules and regulations, which is the way this country's been going over the last 8 years.
John, we started this conversation with, can we expect the government in North Carolina to stand between us and the federal government if it comes to something really, really critically important like our Second Amendment rights?
Yes, and we have, and we will.
Okay.
That's the short answer.
Already. Okay. Well, gentlemen, we're getting close to running out of time here. So
can I say one thing?
I'm going to give each one of you opportunity, and we'll start with you, Norm.
Let me just say this, because a lot of our discussion in the last half hour of the program has been focused on our judicial system. One thing that will really temper a runaway federal appeals court is a conservative Supreme Court, because one of the things that is a bad mark against any federal judge is to continuously have their decisions overturned by the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. That is such a black mark, probably grounds for dismissal if enough of that happens. And so, we just really need to be in prayer about who President-elect Trump puts on as a Supreme Court justice, mm-hmm. because the last thing we need is a moderate that can go either way.
Oh, dear heavens.
We need, in fact, if I could make a recommendation, if he loses the state Supreme Court position, I would recommend Bob Edmonds.
Well, Norman, you said prayer, and I'm glad you did that. What kind of role do you think the Christian vote played in this election?
I think it played a lot of role. I still think when we see the final numbers, we're probably going to be disappointed, because I think still too many Christians stayed home and did not come and vote. If they had, it would not even have been in question. You could have called it at 8 o'clock, just like they did when Reagan and Carter. By the polls closed at 7:30, by 8 o'clock they'd given it to Reagan.
However, we have done better.
We've done a lot better. We're headed in the right direction, believe me, and I'm glad. But I think a lot of these votes that have come out in this cycle were not necessarily Christian votes, as they were people who were, like Michael said, are fed up with the system and they want to see change.
One of the things that I think was very interesting about this election was Franklin Graham going around the country holding prayer rallies in every state and encouraging Christians to come out and vote. He didn't endorse a candidate, but he encouraged Christians to come out and vote. And I think that was a very positive thing to have happen.
It was, and I think more pastors need to follow his lead. Michael, your final
comments.
And
over 14,000 people showed up in Raleigh to hear him speak, and not one media outlet covered it for more than
right. And the one phrase that he made that will stick with me forever is he stood on that stage and said, I will not have anything to do with Democrats.
Michael,
when we get to the point where our culture is corrupt, where our media is corrupt, and we're at a sad state, and that's where we're at right now. We can't depend on the media. The original purpose of the media was to keep us as citizens informed. Well, they're keeping us informed, all right, but they're keeping us informed on those things that they want to keep us informed on to sway us because they have an agenda. So we all have to be smart enough to do our own research. We have to be smart enough to look at our candidates in the future, who we put up for election. And I've been saying this for a while. You can't sit around and wait to see who puts their name in the hat for these local offices. You have to get out there and recruit. Every citizen has the right to try and talk somebody into running that they think would be a good candidate. And a lot of people would run if it was proposed to them, if something they hadn't thought of. Character does count. You know, character became an issue big time with Clinton, the Clinton and Monica scandal. And the left said, character doesn't matter. It doesn't affect how he is as president. And of course, now we know that to be incorrect. It did affect how he dealt with us as president. He lied to us. And character does matter. You hear that you can't legislate morality. I'm sorry, but every bill we put in everywhere is legislating, because we're telling you that one thing is right and one thing is wrong, okay, regardless of what it is. So
murder,
you know, everything
stealing.
Everything we do is legislating morality. The question is, where do we get our morals from? And that's up to, you know, that's up to the citizens to look introspectively and try and figure out what it is they want out of their government. What kind of government do they want? When you get that government, when you get people in government, it's a brand new election. You've got new people in office all the way up and down the chain. And some people like myself that are still here, Sanderson and John. But
thank goodness.
But you need to work with us. You need to call us, contact us, let us know what it is you need. We need your help sometimes. I've called back here. I mean, we've got great people here in Craven County in this area. I've called back here and was able to mobilize people to jump on something and attend a meeting and speak against an issue, this and that, where they prevailed, okay? But that's how it has to be done. Everything cannot be done by the legislature. Everything cannot be done by your commissioners. Sometimes it takes we the people to get involved and say, we've had enough, we're not going to do this anymore. And I think we saw that on a large scale in this election.
We did. And I think there was a lot of exposure on the corruption of the media during this cycle also. Look at the polling. I heard one comment said the polls weren't worth the paper it was written on. And people are starting to wake up and find out they're being lied to. And one of the things I've talked about here numerous times is, people, it's time for you to cut the media off. Cut your cable off. You can go online with a Roku box or some other streaming media box and select what you need. The news that is going to bring you the truth. You don't have to listen to the mainstream media. John, your final comments?
It's very simple. Thank you. I was successful in my election because of, one, the citizens that got out and voted, and two, because of the grassroots effort that got all three of us elected. All three of us would not be sitting here right now if it wasn't for the people that started off in the chill and the rain, and it was dark outside yesterday morning at 6:30, and handing out sample ballots and handing out, you know, information on candidates, and did it all through early voting, and it's the people that work at the polls, excuse me, it's the people that elect us, and I just can't thank them enough for putting their trust in me, and I'm honored they do that, and I want to be held accountable. I want to listen to them, but I want to represent them the best way I know how. So thank you.
I was going to say, you will be held accountable by those same people that worked so hard to get you elected. You'll be seeing them in Raleigh holding you accountable for your actions. Well, gentlemen, we appreciate the time that you've given us this evening. Again, congratulations to each one of you. I hope you're successful in your effort. Well, folks, you've heard a little bit about what CCTA is all about this morning. And we're going to stop here for another break, And we'll come back in a few minutes and wrap this show up.
Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend features handmade Italian dishes, lasagna, spaghetti, fettuccine Alfredo, stromboli, calzone, and many more. Panicelli's uses only the freshest ingredients, and they have fantastic New York-style pizza in four sizes or by the slice. Panicelli's Pizzeria also has great salads and subs. Panicelli's is easy to find. Just head to River Bend and Panicelli's will be at 40 Shoreline Drive. For authentic Italian food at an affordable price, head to Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Guys, now your final comments. Mary?
I just want to say CCTA is nonpartisan, but we have the right as members to work on behalf of the candidates that we feel go along with our mission statement. And I spent a certain amount of time at the polls, as we all did. And I just want to say that most of the voters were courteous. They were polite. They were interested in the literature, the conservative literature that we were handing out, and that I was really impressed at the manners and the quality of the North Carolina voters.
Bob?
Now, first off, first thing in the morning out at the polls, again, I guess it was really the first cold, cold day, and there were a lot of people shivering when they came out early in the morning, and unfortunately, we've moved down here about 3 years ago from New England. So I really didn't feel the cold. One thing I really did want to say is that there was a young lady that went in to vote, and she had thanked us for being out there to help. And she left. She came back about 20 minutes later with a whole jug of coffee and the cups and everything like that for us to just help make our day a little bit easier and a little bit better. And it was nice to be appreciated and also to be there to help a number of people, and also to help people, and I'm going to add, regardless of race, that we were really, really appreciated.
Hal?
Well, I spent a lot of time outside the polling places talking to people going in and trying to encourage them to support our constitutionally conservative candidates. One thing that really struck me was the friendliness of so many people that came by. We would often find ourselves standing beside a Democrat handing out the Democratic literature. So you got one person handing out Republican or conservative and another one handing out the Democrat literature, whatever. But we'd often fall into conversations with each other. Most times they were very friendly conversations.
Right.
I saw a time or two people got a little contentious with each other. And of course, I guess that's natural. But I was impressed with how often it was a congenial conversations held out there.
And you often find out you've got more in common than you realize.
Absolutely.
When you get into these conversations. If you get rid of that DNR and go ahead and get it out of the way and just talk man to man or woman to woman or whatever, you
human
find out...
Human being to human being.
Right, human being to human being. You find out that they're not so awful after all.
And like Bob said... we had agreed among ourselves to hand out or to attempt to give our information to everybody that comes through, regardless of race, color, creed, and anything else, just every person that comes through. And most people, I don't know whether out of politeness or what, but almost everybody took one when they were offered one. We had a few people say, no, I got my mind made up, or I know what I'm doing, and things like that. There were a number of people like that. But... for the most part, people were civil to each other, even under those circumstances. So
right.
I thought that was really good. I did see one or two things that seemed questionable to me. One of them was a fellow that was, and I've already talked about it one time, a guy that was rode a bicycle down from his neighborhood, was looking for a personal item he'd left on a van. So obviously somebody was driving a van through his community and asking people to you know, get in and go vote. Well, they drove through curbside instead of going out, you know, getting in line like they should have, a number of them. So I think one of the things we need to try to watch for is some kind of a ruling on the Board of Elections that everybody that votes curbside has to have some disability or inability to stand in the line, instead of a van going through with one or two people like that and four or five more that are perfectly capable of getting in the line.
Right. See a lot of abuse of that.
Yeah.
Raina?
Well, the polling experiences, I've got one that ties in with the young people sort of thing. There was a young woman named Kylie who's a junior in high school who wanted to come out and help. And I was giving out what we refer to as palm cards and to incoming voters. And she wanted to do that. So she watched me for a little while. Then I gave her a stack of cards and she began doing it. Well, there are a lot of adults who can't approach perfect strangers and do something like that. She did it with aplomb from the very beginning. What I ended up doing was actually handing out Josh Willey's cards, staying near her. But she did it for several hours and she did it beautifully. There is a young up and coming crop of people who can help with things like this, and that was
absolutely.
I'm optimistic for so many reasons, and that's one of them.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's my turn.
Yeah, sure.
Go for it.
Well, I served as a judge, the chief judge at one of the polls, and I got to observe a lot of things. For the most part, it wasn't that bad, but there are a number of things that aren't illegal, but I don't think they should be allowed in the polls. And, you know, that's people helping people. People helping people that can't vote at all, and they're voting for them. Mm-hmm. And they help four or five, six people in a row.
Yeah.
I think once they come through, they need to go out the exit door mm-hmm. and not be able to go from one to the other and help out. So there's a number of things there that we can look at. But, you know, when all was said and done, our process worked.
Yes, it did.
Yes.
It worked. We're still the best country in the world. We still have the best process. And even with all the flaws, we really did a good job.
And with any luck, we're tuning up to get even better, as good as we've been ever.
Right. Well, folks, you've heard from your legislators this morning, your elected officials, and you've heard them ask for your help. Representative Bell let you know that they want to be held accountable, and there's a number of ways you can do that. CCTA has a watchdog committee, and they will accept you to come in and help them share the burden of keeping an eye on these elected officials. I guarantee you, Hal would love to have you. So, here's what you can do. Go to cctaxpayers.com. There's a contact button. There's a feedback button. You can hit either one of them, and you can get information about CCTA and how you can help hold your elected officials accountable. You can go to the NC Legislature website, NCLEG, just Google it, and each and every representative's information is there, their contact information, pretty little pictures. Well, some of them aren't so pretty. But you can find out about your representatives and how you can get in touch with them. And if you want to ask them questions, I'm sure most of them will be glad to answer those for you. And if you just want to hold them accountable, you've heard three here today that said they would allow that. So, folks, thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call. Join us again next Sunday at the same time. And until then, be safe, and we'll see you then.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.